Blog Talk Radio.
Canada, and that was lovely, you know, just pulled the back seats down and you got a lot of space to sleep.
But it depends on your family size, I suppose. You know, do what you can. You know, and then if it's warm enough, I know, get out and camp a little. You know, stay near your car, of course. But
then the car gets lost, and you're on foot.
Yeah.
Oh, that you don't like that. Then that starts to suck. What's the first thing you do need to do the first night you hit the streets? You need to get a sleeping bag.
I mean, first of all,
you try to find a place to stay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, first and foremost. I actually knew about a rooftop from when I was a kid. We used to play on a rooftop around my grandma's house, so I went on a roof so I could avoid police. Because if sleeping anywhere, even sitting on a curb in Mesa, you're going to get a ticket just sitting on the curb if you look homeless. So find a place to sleep, of course, that where you're not going to be bothered by police, you know, and that's tough to do, unfortunately. You know, you're behind a building, private property, you know, in a field, most likely private property, or you're going to be bothered by other homeless people. So, you know,
could you talk about the danger aspects? What would someone that's new to staying on the street needs to watch out for? Top priority, what's the most important danger element?
Friends. I would say don't make friends.
Why?
They're not friends, you know what I mean? 99% of people that, hi, how you doing, they want something from you, you know what I mean? Unfortunately.
Is that why homeless are always by themselves? They don't congregate in groups that much?
I think a lot of those guys are usually mentally insane, but yeah, I would say so. You see a lot of people walking, you know, you see them congregate on Mill, but most of those kids at nighttime, they go their separate ways because, you know, sleeping next to someone you've met, you've been hanging out with for a week, they've been nice all week long, you know what I mean? And you let your guard down just a little and you wake up in your sleeping bag and your clothes are gone, you know?
Well, that sucks.
So I would say be careful who you make friends with, if you make any friends, you know?
Food, how do you get food? How do you get water? How do you get a change of clothes? Are there shelters?
Dude,
are there churches?
There were so many things that I never even fathomed until I became homeless, but making a phone call becomes a problem. You'd be done with a cell phone. So, good thing to do is find yourself a $15, $20 cell phone with some prepaid time on it, you know, at Circle K. Get one of those first and foremost so you can call around and maybe get a job. You said water.
Water, food, how do you
get
that?
In Arizona, they have to give you water 90% of the places you go. If you have your own cup especially, they can't refuse you water by law.
That's
so
good.
That's kind of cool.
So you can go to any fast food place and ask for water.
Yeah.
And they have to fill it up.
Exactly. And I noticed in Texas they tried to charge me for that at different places. So I was blessed to be back home when I came home. But
food.
Offer to work. And unfortunately, people still look like they want to spit on you when you offer to work. But that's good to hear. When you offer to work, people say, well, yeah, you know what? Well, I'll find something for you to do, even if it's menial. They put you to work, and they throw you $5, $10, you know what I mean? Or at least you offered, and they'll say, oh, you know, most people don't offer to, so here's $5, you know?
How come most homeless people don't offer to work for money? Why do they just ask for change, and why do they not say, hey, can I do some work for you?
I think they honestly are scared they'll get put to work, you know what I mean? They're homeless a lot of times because they chose not to work, unfortunately. Not everybody's honestly hard up and lost their job and is trying to get back on their feet. A lot of these people are homeless for life, and they're content with it.
And is the best way to approach people, is it house to house? Is it the gas station?
Yeah, I would say if you're private property, gas station, hit them and keep moving. Ask somebody, keep moving. You can go twice a day and get fed at St. Vincent de Paul. But it's so depressing down there. It's just the worst of the worst. I refuse to do it. And I feel like a lot of them, they're mentally ill, you know, a lot of them. So they don't have the means to go out here and work and offer to work or even know how to talk to somebody to get a cheeseburger like
that.
You know what I mean? So
I
don't want to eat that crap food, you know. I'd
rather crap food.
It's horrible.
Not that McDonald's is the greatest, but way better than that food.
This is what I want, you know, and I can choose. If I can get a few bucks, then I might be able to get a piece of pizza or I have an option, you know. But I feel like they need it a little more than I do, so I don't go down to St. Vincent de Paul. Or you can get food boxes from churches, but that's 90% bread, you know what I mean? It's mostly bread.
Not
product.
Really healthy.
Yeah, donuts from last week, you know, from some Safeway or something. So a lot of homeless, their food isn't a very big issue, honestly, for homeless people. But I would say a place to sleep at night, it is. That's tough. And the way you're treated is so it's horrible the way people treat you just because.
So you're saying one of the biggest challenges with being homeless is the mental, social torture.
Yeah. I hate to say torture because I don't want to be a victim, but it is torturous. It takes a little piece of your soul every time you ask somebody for help. And they look like they either ignore you flat out, like you don't exist. They won't even look at you, which is, that gets to me. After the initial anger, then it's pure depression, honestly. I try not to be woe is me, but it gets depressing. And then when they won't even look at you, I mean, if they, no thank you. I get no thank you. I say, can I, you guys possibly have 50 cents so I can get a cheeseburger? No, thank you. No, thank you. What is that? Just straight no, because, you're scummy, whatever. It hurts. That takes a little piece of your soul every time someone treats you like shit. So be nice to homeless people. Be nice to anybody who just looks different than you, God forbid,
Yeah. What a trip.
Don't stay in one place too long. If you're going to be talking to other people in general, don't stay in one place too long because the cops are going to come bug you and assume you're panhandling. He's sitting in one place, just even sitting anywhere other than a bus stop. If you're sitting on the curb, the Mesa police, the Arizona police will give you a ticket or run your name and God forbid you have a warrant, anything like that. So don't stay in one place too long. Keep moving and keep your head up. Don't let it discourage you because things will get better. They will.
That's the word from a homeless guy.
Yeah, how to survive on the streets homeless in America.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, pretty sad.
No, he was pretty articulate.
The guy lost his job somewhere, and everything after that was just...
His life just fell apart.
Yeah, they do.
But he said the worst part is being treated badly by people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one. How... President, war made easy, how presidents and pundits keep spinning us to death. That's an hour long. That may be one that people want to do on their own.
Yeah, it's a YouTube. It's on YouTube. You can go to War Made Easy, how presidents and pundits keep spinning us to death. And
so that's a media thing.
Yeah. And what I wanted to do is I just wanted to... Goldman Sachs wants the European bank bailout now.
Oh, sure. So that they can give money to their buddies over there.
It's not bad enough they already did that. And it's not bad enough we already gave them $3 trillion
to
European banks. Okay, now they want more.
Yeah.
These bastards.
Unbelievable.
It's like, should we read this one? Because it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's just that people know that this is happening again,
It's the same guy. How much money is enough for them? There isn't ever enough for them. They have a bottomless pit of greed.
This is the chairman of Goldman Sachs.
Greedy bastard.
The greediest.
This is from the Miami Herald?
Yep, Miami Herald. Hang on a sec. There we go.
ECB's Draghi pushes for a European bank bailout fund. This is from Brussels. European Central Bank President Mario Draghi said Monday the 17-country Eurozone must move swiftly to set up a joint fund to restructure and wind down troubled banks, claiming it is a necessary step to stabilize the financial system. We all know that's bullshit
They're pulling us
in. The fund should be financed by levies on financial institutions to ensure it will not have to tap taxpayer money over the medium term, guaranteeing that resolution costs are first and foremost borne by the private sector, he told European lawmakers. The fund must be able to make timely and impartial decisions on how to best deal with a troubled bank independently of national considerations, he said. Does that mean taxes? That would help to break the perverse link between sovereign and banks, Draghi said, referring to the current situation where rescuing troubled banks drags down Eurozone nations with already weak public finances. Such a joint fund, however, is met with skepticism In countries like Germany, Europe's biggest economy, where politicians fear their country's money could be used to bail out banks in other countries. Well, that's what happened with us. European leaders have called on the European Commission, the executive arm of the 27-nation European Union, to draft a proposal for such a fund, as many details of its planned implementation remain unclear. Draghi said the fund is the logical and necessary step to complete a banking union once the ECB takes over the oversight of the bloc's banks. That step is planned to take effect next year, but many details on the relevant legislation have yet to be hammered out. We have to find the proper equilibrium between national and centralized supervision. In the parliamentary hearing, Draghi also brushed aside worries over so-called currency war, in which countries try to lower their national currency's value to gain a competitive edge in exports. The euro has recently risen sharply against the dollar and the yen, among other currencies, but Draghi said those movements remain within the recent historical average. The exchange rate is not among the bank's policy targets, but it's taken into account as an important influence on economic growth and inflation, he said. The euro's appreciation combined with the sluggish economy risks pushing inflation down more than expected, he added. We will assess the situation according to price stability, he said. Draghi also reiterated the ECB's economic outlook, warning that beginning of 2013 will remain weak, but the bank expects a gradual recovery this year. The ECB forecasts the Eurozone's economy will shrink by 0.3% in 2013, with a slow recovery only starting later in the year. In a positive sign, Germany's central bank said Monday that the Eurozone's biggest economy is on track to avoid a recession, as it's showing signs of growth in the first 3 months of the year. A growing German economy could help speed up the recovery of the wider Eurozone, which is in a recession. Governments are cutting spending and raising taxes to reduce heavy levels of debt, slowing their economies. Growth is key for solving the debt crisis, since it shrinks the size of the country's debt relative to their economy and increases revenue from income and business taxes.
Cool voice tonight. I'm so happy you could read that. And this is from the Miami Herald.
And who was the report? Did say who the reporter was?
Yeah, right.
Oh, Jürgen Bett, Baez.
David McHugh.
He contributed to the story. He's in Frankfurt.
He contributed to it. Okay. So let's go back to our other articles. How Coca-Cola's pro-aspartame PR misleads the public. Think you're doing your body a favor by opting for diet soda? This is their ad. It says, it doesn't meet any of the criteria for clean food. Well, actually, this is not their ad. This is the thing they put out. It doesn't meet any of the criteria for clean food, whole, fresh, organic, local, or seasonal. It's highly processed food. It has no nutritional value. Now, this is Diet Coke, by the way. It is highly acidic. It contains dye. It contains highly processed sweeteners, high fructose corn syrup, and aspartame. The neurotoxin aspartame is a major component of the artificial sweetener aspartame. Aspartate is part of the aspartame. And it never goes bad. The longer the shelf life, the shorter the human life. The Coca-Cola Company Beverage Institute for Health and Wellness, an oxymoron if ever there was one, has released an aspartame safety page that is described as a resource for professionals. The only problem is that it claims aspartame is safe for use by nearly all populations except for those born with a genetic disorder, PKU, phenylketonuria. In reality, research suggests this artificial sweetener may be implicated in the health risks ranging from cancer to seizures and even death. So, we've been talking about this for years, and but you know,
you have to keep saying it.
You
got to
keep talking about it.
Aspartame pathway.
It's by Dr. Mercola, by the way. So Mercola.com, and let's go on here. Excuse me.
Aspartame is used in more than 6,000 products worldwide, including Diet Coke products, which contain up to 190 milligrams of aspartame per 8.3 fluid ounce serving. Coca-Cola notes that when aspartame is digested, the body breaks it down into aspartic acid, phenylalanine, and methanol. Isn't methanol a gas? And it is methanol that is one of the root problems with aspartame. However, Coca-Cola and many other food and beverage manufacturers often misleadingly counter the claims of methanol being a harmless aspect of aspartame by pointing out that it occurs naturally in fruits and vegetables. For instance, Coca-Cola writes, compared to amounts obtained from an aspartame-sweetened beverage, these components are consumed in much greater amounts from a variety of foods, including milk, meat, dried beans, fruits, and vegetables. A serving of tomato juice provides about 6 times more methanol compared to an equivalent serving of a beverage sweetened with aspartame. So
why would methanol cause a problem in aspartame? And let's see what Dr. Mercola...
Dr. Woody... Monty, Dr. Mercola interviews him. Let's play that.
Yeah. About aspartame.
Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Mercola, and today I'm joined by Dr. Woody Monty, who is a professor emeritus at Arizona State University in food and chemistry. And he's here to join us today because he has developed perhaps the one known as the world expert and with the most proficiency in understanding some of the toxicities of methanol as it relates to aspartame, one of the most commonly used artificial sweeteners in the world. I think you're going to love the information that he's going to share because it's just fascinating. And it has many other implications other than just artificial sweeteners. So if you're thinking that you don't drink artificial sweeteners, you don't think you need to listen to this, you better think again because it's really important.
I've lightly studied all the food additives, but I've concentrated on just a few.
Okay.
And most of this, of course, is the variance of your career. You know, you start studying one chemical and then something leads to another. And so you have to become an expert. It takes a long time to become an expert.
Sure. At least 10 years.
At least 10 years. And so, right after sulfiting agents, I got involved in aspartame.
Okay.
I was asked by the soft drink beverage industry to look at aspartame.
That should be the late 70s, mid 70s?
Yeah, well, actually, no. You know, it wasn't until 83.
83, okay.
81, these dates are really important, Joe. 81, basically the summer of 81 is when aspartame first came out, but it first came out in powdered drinks only. And for good reason. And so,
what do you mean by powder drinks?
Crystal Light.
Okay.
That kind of thing. They didn't want to put it in the liquid form because they knew in the liquid form it would break down. And what it breaks down into is methyl alcohol and what's left of the molecule.
In studying aspartame, why don't we just define what aspartame is composed of? It's a dipeptide.
It's a very small molecule containing 2 amino acids. Linked together, they're dipeptide. One of the amino acids has been modified by adding methyl alcohol to it. Okay, so the phenylalanine has had methyl alcohol added to it. That bond is it's called a methyl ester. It's very weak. The Japanese, Ajinomoto, developed a method to produce that phenylalanine with the methyl alcohol attached to it.
Okay.
And then they took that and bound it, and that made it very cheap to make. Much cheaper to make, and so that's the magic of it.
So that it was primarily done for commercially industrial purposes, attached to methyl alcohol.
Yeah, you see, so that's important. There's one more thing that I wanted to talk about on this.
It's a little bit long.
Yeah, but there's we're pretty much.
Where can folks get that to listen to it if they really want?
Go to Mercola.com. Dr. Mercola is the
And the article is aspartame pathway. It's a little complicated, so.
But it really tells you about what's going on with this stuff and why. And then there's another article that not dealing with aspartame, but
fluoride.
We talked about fluoride quite a bit, and we had Jim Russell on
a few weeks ago.
Yeah, from We Are Change, who got a bill passed.
No, got
a bill to be considered.
They're writing that bill and see what happens.
To get rid of fluoride in Waterbury water and state, actually.
Why is poisoning of children, this is Florida, fluoride gate, why is poisoning of children considered a valuable public health policy? I have no idea. The debate over the dangers of fluoride has been going on for more than six decades. Study after study confirms that fluoride is a dangerous, toxic poison that bioaccumulates in your body while being ineffective at preventing dental decay. Dr. David Kennedy's documentary film, Fluoride Gate, An American Tragedy, exposes the sordid truth about water fluoridation, and that it has nothing to do with promoting dental health. Water fluoridation came about as a result of a massively successful PR campaign and was reportedly first suggested as a way to protect aluminum and steel producers from lawsuits against the fluorine pollution coming from their plants. In fact, what's being heralded as a safe and effective prophylactic against cavities is actually a toxic industrial waste product, and it's being added to water supplies because they have so much to get rid of, and toxic waste disposal is expensive. In a nutshell, a solution was devised in which hazardous waste could be eliminated at a profit.
Water fluoridation, the willful destruction of children's health. Dr. Kennedy, who produced and directed the film, is no scientific slouch. He has a BA in comparable biochemistry and psychology.
Physiology.
And is the past president of the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. He received his doctorate in dental surgery from the University of Missouri in 71. He has lectured about the safety of dental materials in the human body to dental professionals around the world, including before the World Health Organization. The film includes a number of distinguished professionals, science doctors, and so on. And the U.S. government has completed a cancer study on fluoride, and Dr. Marcus discovered the raw data simply did not fit this final conclusion. He subsequently wrote a report calling for the study to be reopened and investigated. Robert Carton, Ph.D., a scientist at the EPA, received a copy of the report, and Dr. Marcus' permission leaked it to the press. Dr. Marcus was subsequently fired and spent the next 2.5 years looking for another job.
While the basis of their motivation remains uncertain, the outcome of water fluoridation is crystal clear. It is destroying our nation, the film states. The film places particular focus on how water fluoridation can harm young children, as they tend to suffer the greatest health effects. One important point to remember, which few pediatricians, dentists, or other health professionals stress, is that you should not use fluoridated water when mixing infant formula, as Dr. Kennedy states on his website. One of California's highest paid and most prolific fluoridation advocates admits that giving an infant a formula made with fluoridated tap water will overdose the baby and cause the teeth to come in spotted and fluoridic. One can only wonder why such insanity persists in our country when it has been banned in so many more advanced democracies.
While the CDC has hailed fluoridation as one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century, the evidence is stacking up against such a proclamation. Scientists from the EPA's National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory have classified fluoride as a chemical having substantial evidence of developing developmental neurotoxicity, and 25 studies have now reported an association between fluoride exposure and reduced IQ in children, including a recent study out of Harvard in which the authors noted the results possibility of an adverse effect of high fluoride exposure on children's neurodevelopment.
Facts about fluoride you need to know. Fluoride is a toxic industrial waste product that is poison to your body and in no way a nutrient, offering no benefits at all to the human body. The fluoride added to water supplies can be contaminated with lead, arsenic, radionucleotides, aluminum, and other industrial contaminants. Additionally, the fluoride added to the municipal water supplies is not pharmaceutical grade. Fluoride exposure comes from tap water, most toothpastes, and many antibiotics, including one given to farm animals. There is a large variation in exposure levels, making it impossible to accurately predict these variables for any person, family, or community. Fluoride exposure for many can easily reach toxic levels. For example, poison control should be called if you swallow a quarter of a milligram of fluoride from toothpaste. Meanwhile, just one glass of water can contain this amount of fluoride. Fluoride is a cumulative poison that has been proven to cause wide-ranging serious health problems such as damage to your bones, brains, and endocrine system. Dental caries can be prevented with means other than fluoridation, thereby avoiding the adverse effects of fluoride.
Many health hazards of long-term fluoride exposure. It's important to realize that fluoride is a cumulative toxin, which over time can lead to more serious health concerns than dental fluorosis or spotting on your teeth. Skeletal fluorosis for fluoride toxicity can be crippling and even deadly. The neurological effects are also quite disturbing. As previously mentioned, there are now 25 studies showing fluoride is associated with diminished IQ, even at levels as low as 0.3 to 3 parts per million, which overlaps the range of fluoride added to the water supply in many American communities. About 100 animal studies have also linked fluoride to brain damage, and studies have shown fluoride toxicity can lead to this wide-ranging problems listed below. And you can really help me read some of these. Increased lead absorption, genetic damage and cell death, brain damage and lowered IQ, impaired thyroid function.
Disrupts collagen synthesis, increased tumor and cancer growth, dementia, bone cancer.
Hyperactivity and or lethargy. Disrupts immune systems, arthritis, inactivates 62 enzymes. Holy cow.
Crippling skeletal fluorosis and bone fractures, inhibits antibody production, severe eye problems including blindness and muscle disorder.
Wow. Inactivates 62 enzymes.
Mm.
Isn't that something that's bad? Educate others.
Dr. Kennedy gives... Oh, you can...
Share this film with them and join the fight to get fluoride out of drinking water. And it says the battle to force the uncontrolled doses of mass medication by hydrofluorosilic acid has moved to Portland, Oregon, home of one of the best natural water sources in the country. It is so good, they've received a filtration exemption. After more than a year of secretive planning, fluoride lobbyists convinced the Portland City Council to add this, to their public consumption. Luckily, the citizens of Portland stood together by gathering enough signatures to force this to a vote on May 21st of this year.
These lobbyists are well-funded, and we're going to see a campaign similar to Proposition 37 in California.
Which was the GMO proposition.
Yeah. The citizens need your help to keep Portland free of this contaminant.
Please help by donating to their campaign to ensure Portland's pure water source remains that way. And God bless them. I'm going to throw this one up on Facebook. I meant to do that. But you can go to this, again, by going to Marcola.com. Come on.
Leo's putting this up on
Facebook. Yeah, I just want to post this onto my...
My site on Facebook.
Yeah, my site is, by the way, is Leo Steele, if you want to go to that.
And there's a film that you can watch, too.
Yep, and there's an entire film with us. It's the documentary. that goes along with it.
And the film is Fluoride Gate.
Fluoride Gate, yeah.
So you go to Mercola.com,
mm-hmm.
and the article is Fluoride Gate.
Yep.
And you can see the video. It's probably a YouTube video, would you think?
Okay. Yeah, it's a YouTube. It is a YouTube video, I think. So, anyway, you can get that there, the Mercola.com. That was interesting, but I was this was kind of interesting. This town, I forget the name of the town. It's in Oregon, out in Washington State, and they had the gun had banned the council.
Had banned the gun.
Oak Harbor was the name of it. They banned concealed weapons
mm-hmm.
in parks and recreation areas and so on in the town. But the state allows you to wear concealed weapons
anywhere. Oh,
in that
state. Uh-huh.
So what happened was, is all of these, all the gun owners in the town, and there were hundreds of them, all went to the city hall with their guns on.
Oh.
Okay, strapped to their sides and everything. And I would have played this, but it's about 12 minutes long. But they got the town council to repeal their law, okay, and a couple of them ran out of there in fright, you know, because everybody was packing guns. So it was really kind of funny, but they did. And then the gun lobby came in and threatened to sue every one of them, every one of the town council individually.
Oh, really?
And the town, because they didn't. There was an unconstitutional law.
Well, it's in conflict with their state laws,
their
so
state
that's
law,
something
right?
that had to be
and,
worked
and
out.
And federal law too, really. But let's see. Let me get to something else. It's time we should kind of play a little song.
Well, why don't we do that while we.
Then I'd like to come out. I'd like to read this because I thought this was fascinating.
Oh, the Amish children that are immune to allergies. That's
yeah.
pretty good.
Because they don't get vaccinated.
So there's some proof for that, folks, and we'll read that article to you.
Yeah. So let me go away for a little news. I don't know what I got here.
Leo's got something to play for you, folks.
Why you guys all over?
Find something else.
Now it's Lent. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to play some kind of serious stuff. So
okay.
I'm going to play my Burnt Rubber Blues, which I like.
recognize the signs, symptoms of children's allergies. But you know what? This article is about the Amish. And let's see. The Amish, it seems, place themselves at risk every day of their lives. And this is from Natural News. They refuse to vaccinate their children, exposing themselves to disease. They drink raw cow's milk, exposing themselves to salmonella. They even, and this is really disturbing, favor natural food, exposing themselves to tomatoes that contain cracks. Given these eccentric practices, isn't it inevitable that their communities become breeding grounds for allergies and asthma? Not according to Dr. Mark Albright, an allergist who has been treating Amish families in Indiana for over 20 years. Albrecht was inspired to investigate the allergy rates among Amish children when he began researching the so-called farm effect, the notion that children raised on farms demonstrate lower allergy and asthma rates than their urban counterparts in Central Europe. Keen to investigate whether the farm effect also manifested itself in the United States, Albrecht assembled a team of German researchers to compare farming and non-farming children in Switzerland with Amish children of Swiss descent in Indiana. Altogether, Albrecht's team assessed the health of 157 Amish children and approximately 3,000 Swiss farming children and almost 11 Swiss non-farming children between the ages of 11,000 Swiss non-farming children between the ages of 6 and 12. Holbrook found out that a mere 5% of the Amish children were diagnosed with asthma versus 6.8% of the Swiss farming children and 11.2% of the Swiss non-farming children. Moreover, only 7% of the Amish children tested positive for predispositions toward allergies versus 25% of the Swiss farming children and a whopping 44% of the Swiss non-farming children.
But you know what bothers me?
Why would you be comparing Swiss children to American children?
The European farming children.
Hmm.
But what the thing that surprises me is why they used such a large number of Swiss non-farming children, all right, in the study. If they only used 3,000 farming children, right? Why would they go to 11,000 Swiss non-farming children?
I don't know.
Ages 6 and 12. I mean, you'd have that many more people to choose from, you know what I mean? Get, almost 4 times the number of non-farmers. So you're going to get more of everything in that number.
Why Holbrook did not investigate why children raised on farms were healthier than non-farming children? He had his suspicions. The study would suggest that if you have an early life exposure to allergens, then somehow it drives the immune system away from developing allergies. Large animals are part of it, and the straw bedding animals sleep on. Also eat, and the fact that their mothers are in the barn when they are pregnant. So it's good to be exposed to some things. Albrecht's study provides an interesting but somewhat predictable conclusion. The Amish lifestyle, while imperfect, does offer children one significant benefit that is denied to most non-Amish children. It forces them to live in the real world from a very young age. Amish children are taught essential life skills such as gardening and farming, sewing and knitting, making natural remedies, carpentry and construction. These skills, aside from assuring their continued self-reliance and independence from the state, fosters an environment that is conducive to superior health. The children are physically active, routinely exposed to dirt and grime, hardened by the elements, and shielded from allelopathic poisons. These facts, coupled with their avoidance of vaccinations, explains why the Amish are putting many of us to shame in the health department. Okay, there was an article here that we wanted to...
Where was it here? Is it in this one?
Yeah. Keep going down the ones.
Here it is. Top 5 medical herbs, medicinal herbs.
That help fight influenza. Simply because we did have a really bad influenza.
See, And they want everybody to get vaccinated.
And
you know?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
This is from Natural News, too. Using herbal medicine to fend off sickness is a traditional practice that still lives on today. Experts debate about the effectiveness of these herbs in preventing influenza and other kinds of disease because of lack of evidence. On the other hand, others have no doubts about the efficacy. The fact remains that these herbs possess qualities to help the body become strong enough to fight off sickness. It is important, however, to consult properly with professionals before taking any of these herbal medicines. Garlic. There are certain characteristics of garlic that make it effective at enhancing white blood cells, which is actually the body's first defense against all sorts of infection and illnesses. There has actually been a research study published about the capabilities of garlic. It was included in the Journal of National Medical Association. The study was instituted by Dr. Tariq Abdullah. According to Dr. Abdullah, garlic's efficacy is proven at the onset of the flu. It is taken with honey and chewed in cloves. This way of consuming garlic helps with easy absorption. The fumes from the garlic can make their way through the sinuses while swallowing it can be beneficial to the gastrointestinal tract. Echinacea.
I use a lot of garlic and a lot of stuff, but especially garlic powder, we eat a lot of it. And I really like the cloves. I like cooking the cloves in there.
Yeah, it's much better.
And everything that I can put it on. So we'll do more of that, I think.
Echinacea. This is another popular herbal remedy. It is well regarded for its ability to enhance the immune system. It also has unique properties that can help ease pain and inflammation, as per the University of Maryland Medical Center. As a matter of fact, there are supplements now that come from dried echinacea. That's a flower. There are certain precautions that should be observed, however, with taking this herb, especially for individuals who are under immunosuppressant medication. To avoid risks and reap only the benefits, the advice of a specialist needs to be sought after. Slippery elm. This herb has a positive effect to the immune system. It specifically works to protect any damaged tissue. Slippery elm can also serve the purpose of protecting the esophagus, stomach, intestinal lining, and throat. This is achieved by the herb through supplying much-needed nutrition. Elderberry. I'm not familiar with that. This is another effective herbal medicine that works great in treating flu cases where the respiratory tract is involved. It helps relieve muscle pain and sore throat, and it also works effectively at lowering fever. Elderberry has long been considered a stimulant for the immune system, and its extract should be taken as soon as the first symptoms of sickness are felt.
Yeah, they used to have elderberry wine.
Yeah, that's probably a nice way of taking it.
Yeah.
You want to finish?
And eucalyptus is the last one, and it's quite effective at treating cough. It can also help relieve the common symptoms of cold and flu, and the fresh leaves of eucalyptus can either be used as a tea or gargled to relieve pain in the throat. It can also be applied as an ointment for relief. There are other medical herbs regarded for their ability to take to help the human body fight off sicknesses such as influenza. But since these herbs may interfere with other medications, individuals are reminded against self-medicating. Health is at stake, so proper medic consultation with a specialist is critical. Yeah. So anyway, this is what they're saying, and we'll say garlic,
echinacea,
slippery elm, elderberry, and eucalyptus. These are all help
fight off the flu.
Fight off the flu and cure other, respiratory ailments. But
that's something that might interest you.
They're selling this everywhere on the internet.
Oh, really?
Everywhere I go, they sell this.
We're talking about neuropathy pain treatment.
Yeah, so they sell this everywhere. And I've seen it. They offer it. If you've ever seen it, it's a 2-week free sample, but you got to pay $30 for the 2-week free sample.
So what's free about it?
They're giving you 2 weeks of it free as long as you pay $30.
Oh.
So you're actually getting like 4 weeks. Something like that. That kind of was strange. Come on, deal. But every single place and the internet, this ad comes up.
Hmm.
NeuropathyTreatmentGroup.com. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a real, they're really...
But you suffer from foot pain.
Well, yeah, but this thing, I've seen the articles and I've seen the whole thing. And it's they got some guy there that says he took it and he never had pain again.
Well, I hope that's true for him.
But I think he was getting better, you know. But it's dubious when they try to, you know, sell these things.
What was the other article we were looking for?
Because if there was anything that if there was anything really great, then usually a neurologist would know about it, no? But I don't know.
How about this one? Federal law. Every living American can be arrested right now for felony possession of drugs made in their own brain.
Made in their own brain. It's totally amazing. And this article freaks you out. And it also, what's nice about this article is it gives you, in case you didn't know, I didn't know what all of the Schedule I drugs were, all right, that are illegal. Well, there's 17 of them, and one of them that you make in your own brain, okay, it's illegal. So it's illegal to make it in your own brain.
If you're reading this, you are guilty of felony possession of a Schedule I controlled substance. That is not a joke. You, like everyone else who is alive and breathing, can be arrested right now by the U.S. federal government, charged with felony possession, then proven guilty of the possession, because you do possess a Schedule I substance in your own brain. What is that? It's dimethyltryptamine, or DMT. Dimethyltryptamine, or DMT, is sometimes called the spirit molecule because of its ability to allow humans to transcend states of consciousness.
U.S. federal code defines Schedule I drugs as, unless specifically accepted or unless listed in another schedule, any material, compound, mixture, or preparation which contains any quantity of the following hallucinogenic substances.
So number one is methylene dioxy amphetamine.
That's
so, like an amphetamine.
And then it's methamphetamine. Methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
Methyl-3-4 methydoxy amphetamine.
That's the second one.
So, it's all methamphetamine.
The third one is triamphoxy amphetamine, which is another
amphetamine. Another one. And then bufotenin. How would you pronounce it? Bufotenine,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then the next one is that dimethyltryptamine.
No, it's diethyltryptamine.
Diethyl?
Is that it? Yeah. Diethyltryptamine. Diethyltryptamine.
Yeah.
And then number six is the one that you produce in your own brain. You produce yourself. It's called, and that's number six on their list of diethyltryptamine. Diethyltryptamine.
DMT. I don't know what the
word
difference.
And the one of, this one is di.
Oh,
that one is di too.
This is dime.
Okay, dimethylamine.
Dimethyl.
The other one is diethyltryptamine.
Well, anyway,
it's almost the same word except there's an M in it instead of a. Instead, it's really this word.
And then there's another methyl.
DMT, remember DMT. And then there's another methyl dioxamine amphetamine. Then there's ibogaine, whatever that is.
And lysergic acid.
That's LSD. Then marijuana.
Mescaline, peyote.
Ethyl piperidibenzolate.
Never heard of it.
Methyl piperidibenzolate again. Psilocybin and psilocybin rather, and then psilocine, and that's from mushrooms you get that.
And this is tetrahydrocannabinol. phenolate.
THC.
Yeah.
Which is the hallucinogenic within cannabis.
What's the big deal about this, you say? Well, for starters, DMT is manufactured inside your own brain, as explained by Scientific American.
There's an article there, but DMT is the only psychedelic known to occur naturally in the human body. 1972, Nobel Prize laureate Julius Axelrod of the National Institute of Health discovered DMT in human brain tissue. Under existing federal law, you not only possess a Schedule I controlled substance you manufacture it. Thus, under existing federal law, you can be arrested at any time and charged with a felony drug possession.
But wait, it gets even crazier. It turns out you not only manufacture DMT in your brain, by the way, you also cultivate this illegal drug in your own yard. Yep. DMT is also found in blades of grass, meaning that when you water your lawn, you are actively cultivating an entire yard of a Schedule I controlled substance. If you think the government arresting people for growing home gardens on their lawn is bad, just wait until the DEA starts conducting armed drug raids on homeowners with nice lawns. Freeze! You're under arrest for felony drug possession. But I was just mowing my lawn. You mean your DMT factory slave scum. DMT is a neurochemical similar to a serotonin. It is also manufactured in the brains of cats and other animals. That means if you breed cats and sell them, you are a drug dealer under U.S. law. Why all this matters? All chemicals in existence are made of the same stuff, elements like hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, and so on. Drug control laws state that a certain arrangement of these elements into molecules makes that molecule criminal. An illegal molecule, however, may have all the same elements of a legal molecule, just strung together in a different pattern. Here's the molecular map of a legal serotonin molecule, and they show you one, and then they show you an illegal one.
Right, which is what they do. They put in the...
It's just in different order, that's all. Note that both molecules are very similar and actually made of the same basic stuff. The only thing different is the arrangement of the molecular bonds. When a government outlaws certain molecules, it is essentially criminalizing the order and arrangement of elements which are, by themselves, completely legal. This brings up a very important legal argument. Can anyone really criminalize the arrangement of elements which are individually considered perfectly legal? In other words, if nitrogen, hydrogen, and carbon are considered legal, how could it be criminal to merely arrange them in certain formations?
Well, patents on, I can understand that if you're trying to create a bomb, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they're just
a nuclear bomb.
They're just making an argument.
It's all a rearranging.
They're just making
particles, hydrogen.
A logical argument.
No, I understand, but yeah, there's also more to that logic. But patents on molecules. This was interesting because in addition to the legal issues states above, intellectual property laws state that certain arrangements of elements are the monopoly property of corporations such as drug companies. Under patent law, arranging nitrogen, hydrogen, carbon, and other elements into particular structures makes you a thief. So this article kind of goes on with it, but I guess you get the point, right?
Yep.
The answer for DMT, at least, is because DMT is the one molecule that allows human consciousness to transcend the mundane and experience a vastly greater experience of reality. Or at least that's what I'm told. I've never ingested DMT or any other illegal drug, but reports on DMT from those who have experienced it are mind-boggling. To learn more, you really need to watch this film called The Spirit Molecule, featuring Joe Rogan, Graham Hancock, Christian Mulli, and others, called The Spiritual Molecule. Yeah, that would definitely...
Take a look and see what that has to say.
Yeah, we're out of time now.
Oh, okay.
But what I'm going to do is bookmark this so I know that I can go back to it sometime and
take a look at it and maybe you want to post it.
Yeah.
So thank you for being with us tonight, folks. I hope you enjoyed our news.
Yeah.
And if you didn't enjoy it, at least it informed you.
Yeah, I'm sure it must have informed you.
So stay tuned for tomorrow night, where we'll be bringing you more news. And do we have a guest tomorrow?
Yes, our guest tomorrow is Dana Siegelman, and she's the daughter of a former Alabama
attorney.
Who was Dan Siegelman. And he was arrested by Carl. He was framed by Karl Rove in the Bush administration, and is now serving time in Louisiana federal penitentiary
for stuff he didn't
for something he never even committed. And but he was
a fall guy.
He wasn't even a fall guy. He wouldn't prosecute political enemies of George
of the Bush administration,
right, or Democrat. He wouldn't prosecute those people that the Bush administration wanted
targeted.
So because of that, he was framed, and the whole thing. Oh, what a mess! And his daughter,
she's trying to get him out.
Dana has been trying since he was in 2004, I believe, is when this, or 2005, when this happened. She and her brother have been trying to clear his name and
try to get him released.
And now what she's trying to do too is she's presenting a petition with many, many thousands of names. I think she has about 45,000 names, and a lot of congressmen, a lot of representatives, a lot of people who are trying to petition Obama to pardon her father. Because he was to serve 7 years, I think he served five of them, and now that he's in his second term, this guy was a former governor of Alabama and congressman, senator actually, I believe, so we're going to talk about that. And in the meantime, if you want to check into that, you can go to look up Dana Siegelman. Also, you can look up. The Alabama Bridge, all right, meaning it's that's the name of the organization.
And we'll find out more tomorrow.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow about it, so look forward to that.
So enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. Good night.
Good night, everybody.